Hello and welcome to the Minimalist Tech Podcast. Today, very exciting episode. Exciting because I am cutting out my home internet. Now, if you've been a long-time listener, you might be saying, hey, you have another episode about having no home internet. Well, this time it's different because at the time previously, prior to the pandemic, I had no home internet. And what I had done was I had an office space that I was renting, was doing my business, that I could go to, and at that office space there was internet. So if there was something I needed the internet for, I could do it during the day at work. And then when I would come home, I had no home internet, you know, during the evenings and during the weekends. And it was great. It was a really great thing. I highly recommend doing that. And worked out great. It was wonderful. Unfortunately, the pandemic happened. Fortunately, I was able to get a remote job. And basically, because of all that stuff that was happening, I ended up working from home. So in order to do that, I needed home internet again. And there's a whole nother conversation about working from home. But essentially I ended up with home internet again. And if you've been listening about, I don't know how long ago at this point, but I've sold my smartphone. I switched to a quasi-dumb phone called the Lite Phone 2 full-time. I have no other phone that I use. That is my phone. And it's very, you know, there's no pictures, there's no web browser. It's essentially, there are podcasts, there's 1 gigabyte's worth of music that you can upload to it, and a couple other things. There's maps and directions, notes application, but very, very, very basic. More basic than most flip phones these days. Most flip phones are actually like just mini smartphones. Most of them are actually running Android and have applications. They have web browsers, they have Facebook and other applications. Some of them have little app stores. So I wanted a distraction-free device, which is why I switched to that. I've been very overwhelmed. I guess I was going to say I've been very happy with it. I mean, what I more accurately, it serves its purpose. You know, it's allowed me to have a distraction-free experience without a smartphone. Smartphones were just very, you know, they do everything all of the time, and so I was on them all the time. So that was great. I've been using that. That's great. But now I am cutting off my home internet, and I'm no longer working from home. I have a job that I go to, and this job also is not an internet-related job. So I wanted to, I think I needed to sort of escape into that for at least for the short term, and have a job where I didn't have to look at a computer screen all day. I think part of what happened to me was I was working from home, looking at a screen, actually multiple screens all day long, and then as soon as I got off of work, you know, go into the other room to relax in front of a television. And then I was on my smartphone after that, so I was basically looking at screens all day, which was just really not good. If I ever go back into software development, I'll be getting a e-ink screen for my daytime work, so that at least I can have some, you know, some away time from a typical computer screen all day long. It's like, you know, there's just, for me, it just was like too much. Just computer screens, TVs, and then smartphone screens. It just was too much screen time. So I've, you know, I'm going through this journey, continuing this journey. I now have a job currently that doesn't require a screen. Requires very little internet. They provide a device where there's some internet connectivity, but it's like heavily monitored. It's the, you know, there's very little need to use that device. I don't have any of my personal information. I wouldn't go on any personal sites on there. It's just very, 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 very basic. So you could essentially say, like, I don't have internet access at work. So, which is literally true. I mean, there's even, like, they block YouTube, they block all sorts of sites anyways, so even if I wanted to, that would not be an option, which is great for me. So this time around, when I say that I'm cutting off my home internet, this is much more significant because I don't have the outlet of my old office space that I could go and just take care of whatever I needed to take care of. So this is really like going without home, without internet, almost period, with the exception of podcasts on my current phone. I'm essentially going to have no internet access. Now there is a little bit of a caveat because I have some hotspot data, but what I'm doing is I've been getting rid of all of the devices at my home that connect via Wi-Fi, so that way it'll be a completely like no internet home space. And this is an experiment, and we'll see how it goes. What I've been doing is preparing for this change, because this is something that requires preparation. Unfortunately, you know, like we used to have a life where we didn't, like the internet was an optional thing. Now we use it for so many things. I have to think about in advance, what do I need to do? What do I need? What am I giving up? What are alternatives? How can I survive and function without a smartphone and without home internet? You know, without access to the internet, like how can I get by? Because there's so many conveniences, and not just conveniences, but like things like banking. Like how do I handle banking? Which is essentially automate as much as possible. And also like, so we'll start going through this, some of the things I've done. So with banking, automated banking, so that transactions are handled automatically as much as possible. Some of that's done, but typically like we have subscription services that you put a card down for, or some type of service like PayPal or something like that. Bills can be handled the same way. Most banks offer some sort of bill pay that will mail out a check to whoever needs it to be mailed on certain dates and times, so that's part of it. And there's also, surprisingly, and maybe not surprisingly, and it's just more of a good, is that a lot of banks still offer text message services for banking. So it's not the most comprehensive type of banking, but you can still do basic things. See transaction history, see balance information, things like that. Not all banks offer that, but there are many that still do, and I think that's a very good thing. Other banks, you literally have to call the number on the card if you wanted to see that type of information, or speak to a customer service representative for some of these types of things. And I'm not certain how much access or ability customer service agents have over the phone to handle certain types of transactions. So for example, if I needed to change a bill pay, you know, some sort of automatic payment that I had set up for a specific need, I don't know if a customer service agent will be able to change that over the phone, or if they're simply going to tell me, well, you're going to have to log into your account to do XYZ. So we'll see how that goes. Those sort of circumstances, you know, there's the opportunity potentially, like every so often there may be like a day spent at a friend or family's house, and it's like asking them if I can borrow their internet for a bit, and then I can handle certain sort of pressing things like that. But we'll see how that goes. But that's sort of like, I guess, the emergency release valve. Otherwise, I know, like, at least back in the day, people would they would have computers at libraries that people would use. I don't feel particularly comfortable using those public devices for doing personal transactions and things like that. So we'll have to rely on the friends and family thing for the rare cases that I will need to do that. But that's only after exhausting sort of the customer service options to see if that's possible, which is interesting. I heard that there is a bill announced in California that was like the right to disconnect bill. When I heard the title of it, I assumed that maybe this was sort of internet related. The bill is more for employees who get calls from their boss on off work hours. It just puts some framework in place. I think sort of offering certain compensation or requiring employers to sort of have some framework of whether or not they're going to contact workers off the clock or not, which is still, I think, arguably very useful. But what I would like to see of a bill is like a right to disconnect from the internet, which would require, you know, basic services like banking and employers and things like that to offer basically employees who don't have internet to still be able to do whatever transactions they need to take care of, right? What, you know, whatever the things that are required. Of course, we live in a world now where, like, applying for jobs, most jobs you have to apply through their website and things like that. Of course, there's can be exceptions to this, but it's a lot of times it is like it's a required step. And because that will then go into some other piece of software. We have so much online software now, so much software as a service software that it's like, you know, things are sort of, it's almost like expected at this point that things are going to go onto the internet, where before that would have been the rare case. Most large companies and a lot of companies have sort of embraced the cloud, which really just means they're using, you know, Amazon Web Services or some sort of cloud storage to manage their web applications. You know, I was a web applications developer, so I kind of got into seeing this to this world. But I also have heard that some companies are moving away from cloud storage and sort of cloud services because the cost is actually can be extremely high for a lot of companies to leverage these services. And going offline makes me think a lot about what type of software is even available at this point offline. There's software, like, for example, the software in for bookkeeping and accounting is actually very difficult to find anything that's offline. There's even really annoying, like, people create, these companies will create like SEO pages. If you look for like, if you search for like desktop bookkeeping software or something like that, that they'll have a page that says, hey, we offer desktop software, but they really don't. What their new definition of desktop software is like, hey, you can log onto the our software through your web browser. Like, that's not desktop software. That's a lie, in my opinion. I've been very annoyed with that because I've been looking for these pieces of offline software as I'm preparing for this change. So I talked a little bit about banking and sort of preparing for that. Also, I'll probably make another episode about this, but years ago I transitioned from like DVDs at the time to starting to buy content digitally, both for movies and video games as well. And particularly for movies, I regret making that transition. The first time that I noticed that it was going to be a regret was when I was traveling overseas. I say overseas, but I was traveling outside of the country, and I had, at the time, I had an iPad Pro, 12-inch iPad, 12.9-inch iPad. I was like, you know, I went all down the technology rabbit hole, and I used that to travel, and one of the things I wanted to do was, like, have it for movies, to watch movies on the plane, and occasionally, if, you know, watch movies while I was there. And I tried to do that when I landed, And the application where I quote unquote purchased all of these movies, like I spent my money thinking I was buying these digital movies, and it wouldn't let me play them. It would say that this content is not available in your country. And I was like, oh, I don't own this. You know, that was a shocking thing. I did continue to sort of purchase digital movies for quite some time, but recently I've started to change that and sort of go back into purchasing Blu-ray movies. My excuse at the time, or my reasoning at the time, was that these physical movies were taking up physical space, and I wanted to minimize the space by going digital. Unfortunately, there's a couple issues with going all digital. One is that the things that you purchase have no value. They have no resale value. If I wanted to resell my huge collection of digital movies, I can't do it. It basically, it's like it's worth nothing. Even though I spent a lot more money, I'd like to admit, on these, you know, I just, there's just no value, and I can't take them with me, you know, that sort of thing. And then I also just can't simply use them offline. Even this is one of the reasons why I don't like services like, for example, the Nintendo Switch has a, they call it like Nintendo Switch Online or Nintendo Online or something. They're one of these services where you can play their old games, like their NES games or Super Nintendo games, and some of the Nintendo 64 games. But in order to do that, you need not only a subscription, but you need to have the Nintendo Switch be online. And it checks it every few days. I don't know the exact time frame. And if you haven't connected to the internet in a certain amount of time, you lose access to these games, even though you're paying a subscription for them. So it's like these type of things I have to avoid, especially with the purpose of going offline, right? I would have to physically get like an older console that just doesn't require online support, or I would have to have some sort of digital version that doesn't require an internet connection, which is just not currently available, at least on the Nintendo side, for like those older games, as far as I know. So movies and games is like the next thing, right? So what I've done is basically start to buy Blu-rays again. And I scanned my digital movie collection and looked for like, what are the most, you know, what are the movies I want the most? What are the movies that I'm most likely to watch again? And also, what are some TV shows that I like to watch? Because, you know, with the internet, you just come home, you browse Netflix, you just kind of, you know, you browse YouTube, you watch whatever is currently available. And I need to create a buffer for that type of time where, you know, so I can have like TV shows where it's more of a short form, you know, half an hour-ish at a time. And then movies for the long form time, right? So that's what I've done, and I've been realizing that there's some TV shows that I'd love to watch. Some of them are older shows that are available on Blu-ray, which is a wonderful format, probably the best format, in my opinion, that we have ever had, because 4K Blu-ray, although it looks beautiful and amazing, there's just not that much 4K Blu-ray content available. Most content, even to this day, is still basically Blu-ray format, which is 1080p, which is the... You know, we can have these 4K screens, but very little TV content, movie content, even through streaming services, is actual 4K. It's just sort of still sort of an oddity. So, or video games, for example. There's video games that are coming out that are, like, there's a game called Hellblade 2, which Microsoft purchased the game studio. And this is one of the, like, really, really important or, like, high-profile games that's releasing in 2024. And the game doesn't even have a resolution of 1080p. It's not. It's less than Blu-ray quality. It's like, you know, so, which is sort of shocking. But it's like if you're paying close enough attention, you sort of realize that these things are happening. Anyway, so I'm happy with Blu-ray. That's my thing. You know, I could have 4K Blu-rays, but honestly, like, I had made a decision that Blu-ray, the format of Blu-ray, is good enough for me. I'm very happy with it. It's a higher quality than a lot of the streaming movies that say they're HD. A lot of them aren't even quite in 1080p format. They use all sorts of compression techniques to make it look as good as possible without having to actually be 1080p. So I'm excited about the movies. You know, I have a little bit of a movie collection that I'm sort of restarting, but the full complete seasons of Blu-rays is what really bridges the gap, I think, where, you know, if it's a long day and I just want to come home and watch something, I can watch those. And it's those shorter formats where if I watch one episode and I want to watch another one, I can do that. And if I just kind of want to be done with it after one, then I can turn it off. I don't have TV as well. I don't have cable, even though that's being replaced with sort of over the internet television. Cable is still offered, cable TV. I'm not doing cable TV. I just, if there was a cable TV option that was sports only and nothing else, then perhaps I would consider that. But that's just not an option, you know, because it's not only going to give you that those sports channels, it's going to give you all the gossipy sort of sports channels, and, you know, they bundle things, this and that together. It's like, I don't want any of that. I just want to be able to focus on, distraction-free experience. And so there are some downsides to this, right? Like, I've been trying to quit YouTube, talked about that in episodes. And there's certain channels that I'm going to miss. I mean, there's just nothing, there's really nothing, what can I say about this? There's nothing that I can, like, do that's going to make me not miss some of these YouTube channels. You know, some of these YouTube channels are fantastic and great and just, you know, entertaining, informative, wonderful in many ways. And that's just not, it's just something I'm going to have to sort of process and deal with emotionally. What I've tried to do to fill that gap is there are a lot of YouTube channels that are available in podcast form. So I've gone through the list of those and subscribed to as many of those that I enjoy as possible so that I can still listen to the content but in audio form. And so that's my sort of stopgap for that. So I'm making sure I have enough content or a lot of content in this podcast format. I also, I have not been a big book reader. Typically, like, video format has been my choice for learning, even. So one of the most frustrating things that I've found is it's actually very difficult to find video tutorial content that's available offline. I haven't been able to find anything on Blu-ray or DVD. I haven't found really anything offline. The closest thing that I've found is there's something called the Khan Academy, K-H-A-N, and there was another service, I believe it was called Calibri, which I think is more of like an educational website or something, that apparently there's some offline content available that way through that service. So I'm going to do a little bit more research before the internet cuts off, which is going to happen very soon. There's also a project called Internet in a Box. And this is something where you can put on like a Raspberry Pi, for example, and it gives you the ability to download a lot of this stuff. Some video tutorial stuff, and some, like, I think it downloads basically all of Wikipedia and some like medical website information. And there's certain sources that you can choose to download. It's more designed for, like, if you live in a space that doesn't have internet, you know, so it's maybe some like sort of third world countries, or for whatever reason the internet is not available in certain places, or if you're really doing some like extreme traveling or extreme like work in an area that's just does not have internet access. It's that type of a device, so I'll be looking into that as well and see if I can get one that's set up prior to the internet disconnecting. Another, you know, good stopgap. I still plan on doing a lot of software development. And so I do have, basically, like, I'm going to have to read books. I do have actual books that are, you know, have software development information on there. Of course, there's books in all sorts of formats. I purchased an e-reader this past year that didn't have Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. I wanted that. Unfortunately, the issue with it is that it's an older... Because it's an older e-reader, a lot of the newer books that are released in a newer format that's not compatible with these older e-readers. It's very unfortunate. There is an ability to convert these... they're called EPUB, the format of these ebooks. You can format them into, sort of convert them into an older format, but it is a tedious process and not always, doesn't always yield good results. So I've thought about getting a Kindle because of this. I do like, for me, I'm not a huge physical book person. For just the reason is that looking at an ebook like a Kindle or you know similar device, Kobo or whatever, you're only able to look at one page at a time on the screen, and for me that really helps sort of focus down my attention, and it helps me read more. I like that format. Whereas the physical book, there's just so many pages, so it's like the temptation to go to the next page or flip around. Of course, there's upsides and downsides to the physical book versus digital book format. And, you know, so there's the possibility that I may at some point purchase a Kindle so that I do have access to these books in, you know, newer books in that sort of ebook format. But at the moment, I'm not doing that to start this. And the reason I'm not doing it is because I have some physical books that I have not read yet. So part of this not having home internet and having less distractions is that I have to fill this time that I'm going to get back with something. And I want to code and I want to really get a chance to like finally go through some of these books. So that's part of the thing as well. It's like I have enough physical books to occupy my time if I'm bored or if I want to learn. I have those physical resources available, and I do feel like I'm missing out on some of the amazing video tutorial content that's available on YouTube. But unfortunately, that content's just not available offline. So the only other option I could do is I could purchase an iPad. And if you sign into YouTube, you can download videos on for offline use if you're paying for YouTube Premium. That's one of the things that I did when I had no home internet previously, but I've either sold or given away my iPads in the past, so I don't have those available to do that with anymore. And I'm not sure if I want to invest in an iPad again. And because also with that is, you know, when you do have internet, like if I go to a coffee shop, for example, I could actually download a ton of YouTube videos and I could be in the same sort of situation where I'm just watching a lot of content that I just sort of wasting my time again. But if I had the discipline to only download certain YouTube videos, then I would do that. So we'll see how that goes. But at this moment, I'm just having to let go of that. What I also recognize about YouTube tutorials is that, or just video tutorials in general, is that there is a bit of trickery. Like you definitely are learning things, but there's more watching than actual learning occurring a lot of the times. So you could watch a tutorial that's like 5 hours long or whatever it is, and if you're not actually coding yourself or applying the things that you're learning, you're not really learning it as well as you think you might be learning it. So the books are more tedious potentially, but there's a potential for more learning, and there's also just the learning in doing. When it comes to coding, there's services like Google, GitHub Copilot, for example, where you, as you're coding, it automatically is giving you suggestions on like the next line of code that you're trying to write, like sort of autocomplete for coding. Without having internet, I'm getting rid of that as well, and the hope is just that I will be forced to memorize more of what I'm doing, and it'll just make me a better coder, right? But in order to do software development offline, I needed to download packages of software that I need to do software development with so that I can install those. So that includes things like the software itself, like, you know, things like Python, Django, Go, you know, whatever language that I'm trying to learn or just using to build things with, I needed to have them offline. So there's an ability to download packages onto your hard drive on your computer, and that you, so that you can install them later on, and that includes, like I said, the main software that you're using plus the dependencies as well. So I had to go through and learn that technique and download the packages that I most frequently use. I could come into a situation where there's a package that I want to download that I cannot because I don't have home internet. And I'm hoping what that does is it forces me to just sort of look more into the learning the language that I'm currently like using, like to learn it more. Because what I've seen is there are things like one of my favorite types of software, it's called Django. It's like a programming language. It's built on top of Python. And it has all of these sort of built-in functions that can do all these amazing things. And what I've seen people do in the real world, including myself, is like, oh, I want to do this thing, so I'm going to go download some package from the internet. Like you do a quick Google search and it says, oh, there's this package that can do this thing, and you go download it and then you install it. But the reality is that actually the programming language itself already includes a function to do that same thing. Like, and so when you went and downloaded whatever from the internet because you just wanted it now, you actually just created more complexity in a project and added another layer that just did not need to be added at all anyways. So in an, even with like the e-reader that I do have, I have basically like the ebook versions of the documentation for the programming languages that I want to learn. I keep saying want to learn more, or sort of want to master, I guess is the best way to say it, because I've worked with the software before, so I have access to that already on this e-reader. And the reason that I'm like hesitant to get a Kindle is because even with learning for myself, it's easy with the internet to go, what are the resources available to learn something? And, oh, here's this video. Oh, here's these books. You know, you sort of end up getting more than you need instead of just sitting down with what you have. So part of the goal with this is not just reduce distractions, but to force me to utilize the resources that I have available. So that comes to like the, you know, like I said, the learning, the books that I already have, the ebook that I have already, and also like the software that I have. So I have to do, I have the absolute best. I have to squeeze out as much as I can from what I already have, as opposed to be able to go look quickly for something else that adds complexity, which is part of what the issue with the internet is for me. It's like it's a squirrel problem. Like, I'm looking things up and it's like, ooh, squirrel, that's interesting. Oh, squirrel, this is interesting. And it just sort of breaks up my mind into looking in different places as opposed to focusing down and mastering a subject. One of the other things with the video tutorials I was concerned about was I've found out that I love working on my own vehicles. I love these older BMWs. That's like one of my passions, and I started out watching countless tutorials on fixing them up and restoring them, and then I started doing my own work on them. I bought one and I started doing my own work on one, and then I just, you know, got another one that's broken. You know, I've relied heavily on YouTube to determine how to resolve issues. And so what I've done there is, without having YouTube moving forward, is purchase the repair manuals. I'm trying to locate a parts manual in the short term as well, where basically it shows every single part that's on the vehicle so I can see the part number, because I'm used to going to a website to order the products that I need. This is the other piece of not having the internet, is shopping. So I need to have the ability to identify a part number that I need, and then I need to have the phone number that these websites have, where I can actually call in my orders. So this is going to be a thing. I actually have done this at least once so far. We actually made a purchase over the phone. But I think what it was I had made a purchase and I needed to adjust the purchase. But I know that I can call them, and so I'm going to have to call and place orders over the phone for this stuff. And that's one of the things that's going to be very interesting. So I've extended that past just my car, of like, what other items do I typically purchase and from whom? And how am I going to be able to place an order over the phone? Some of the things I'm not going to be able to do, for example, like things like Instacart or DoorDash. As far as I know, you can't purchase that using a phone. You know, they need you to go to the website and pick your products and whatever. But there are some services like Uber that you can call a phone and schedule a ride. You actually don't need a computer. As long as you have an account that's already been set up and that has an active credit card or debit card or whatever attached to it, you can just place an order over the phone. So I probably should write an article about this, because there's so many little nuanced things that I've done and been looking at. But I've also started looking at catalogs. That used to be the thing. Like, for a while, there's mail-in catalogs was the thing. A lot of people know, like, the Sears catalog was a big one that everybody had, this big catalog that you would get in the mail and you could just look through whatever you needed. So there's less of those types of catalogs available these days, and I've been looking for which catalogs can I subscribe to so that I physically get these things in the mail. Also, outgoing wise, you know, I have a printer, I bought stamps for envelopes. But there's other catalogs I need to, like, I have, basically I ordered like a parts catalog for tools, because that's something I'm like very into now, so that I can look through which tools I need to repair vehicles. And I'm like trying to find something that would be for like electronics as well, because there's a certain amount of electronic stuff that I do purchase. So it's really interesting experience, and really sort of this like experiment to see what can I get offline, you know, like, and so this is also like news is something that I've consumed on the internet. As much as I've tried to limit that, it's something that is just there and sort of a constant, hard to turn away from. I want to have less exposure to the sort of sensationalized news stories, but I still want to stay somewhat informed. So I've started to look at like what sort of physical newspaper could I subscribe to, right? Because I wouldn't mind getting like once a week. I think that used to be a thing. People would get like the Sunday newspaper or something. I don't know. I think they used to call it like the Sundays. I don't know if that's even available anymore, but those are the type of things that I'm looking into, of like actually like what can I get in the mail, and what sort of things, like I said, what, you know, what some things I can purchase and order. And I know, like, when I was creating leather wallets, I still have a sort of section of, you know, in my little work area for that. And I have gotten things in the mail from them. It's just been a while, so I might need to check on that as well and see, like, hey, can I make sure that I'm subscribed to this mailing, your catalog that, you know, that's in the mail, or which other ones are available. So catalogs by mail, order by mail, that's a thing I'm looking into as well. Going back to the computer section, in the software development side of things, this is a really interesting thing for me as well. It's like GitHub is where, it's like the main website where people push their code. So it's like you develop your code on your primary computer and you push it up to GitHub, this website, to save it. And then if you have multiple people working on the same project, they can all pull from that same GitHub repository onto their local computers to, you know, do whatever work they need to do and then upload it to that. So I'm working on creating that sort of environment locally where I can do the same thing, except the instead of using github.com or gitlab.com, I'm using like a computer that would be located somewhere, you know, locally in the house, basically, so that I can push and pull that code from. Because that's, I've talked about this with a previous episode of, like, that's how I want to design office space anyways. So this gives me a chance to work that out and sort of get prepared for that. So there's still the ability for collaboration and backups and things like that. So that'll be interesting. So that's like, in order to do that, you have to download Git to your computers, which is something that I just typically do, or it's sometimes pre-installed depending on the operating system, I think. So that's an interesting thing. But even like in the software side a little bit more, I use IDEs. IDE is an integrated development environment. It's basically just a piece of software that you use to write your code. And the one that I currently use requires a subscription. So if I'm not connected to the internet, I'm not going to be able to renew that subscription. So I've been looking into alternatives as well. So Vim, if you're on the nerdier side and actually gotten into software development, is like a really nerdy way to code. It's like, it's very kind of old school way. There's no graphical user interface, right? There's no buttons to click on. It's all text files, basically. And that is something that I'll be looking into. There's another version of Vim called like something NVim or something. That's a little bit more sort of user-friendly in terms of graphical, like there's more colors and things and has some additional features. So I may be looking into switching to that because I don't have to worry about a subscription since it's like an open source piece of software that still does everything you need to do. But we'll see. So I'm going to be looking into that as well, just making sure I have that downloaded and ready to go. What else? Music. I made a YouTube video about CDs a while back, years ago actually. It's still on YouTube, I believe. You can find that channel. It's under like THA Choice, all one word, would be the name of the YouTube channel. I called the YouTube channel Minimalist Tech, but someone else had the name and I didn't officially get the name. Whenever YouTube changed their, like, they changed the naming policy at some point, it's hard to find. That's what my point is. But the point is, I have a like 200 disc CD player, so I purchased some music on CDs. But I also built a Windows XP computer years back, where I have iTunes on there, and I basically was able to digitize all of my music again. The plan was to get an iPod. I just never got around to getting an iPod. So I do need to do that. I don't need to do that, but an iPod would be very useful because an iPod is very much like an offline device. You basically can take it from a CD onto your computer and then you can get your music then onto the iPod. That's how things were. Some people are going back to that because it's such a wonderful experience to have an iPod. It's not a need for me right now, But what I did do is I have purchased enough music through iTunes, which I've done on my modern Mac computer, because Apple has been pushing very hard for people to subscribe to Apple Music, but they still have iTunes. Like, you can still go and buy albums in MP3 format, basically, from Apple through iTunes on your computer. It's like now called the Music app, but there's a tab for called iTunes that or like iTunes Store or something like that. So I've been, you know, over time, I've already been moving in this direction for a very long time. So I already have a good amount of music that I want that's already available in that format, and then I can listen to that how I like. The only difference is going to be, in order to get music onto the Lightphone, you have to go to the Lightphone dashboard, and you have to upload your music to the Lightphone dashboard, and then it downloads it onto your phone. I won't be able to do that anymore without the internet. So, you know, having an iPod, ideally having like a Bluetooth-enabled iPod, which is something that you can actually buy. There's like modified versions of the old iPods that have a USB-C case with Bluetooth capabilities. I need to buy one of those. I've been, you know, like I said, I've been kind of going around it for years, but I need to finally just do that so that I have the iPod, because that's going to be a thing for me with music. Otherwise, CDs is a thing. Part of this is like, it used to be a thing where if you wanted something, you wanted a movie, or you wanted music, or whatever you wanted, you would have to go physically to a store to do that. And I'm going to have to physically do that again, which is not a bad thing. This is part of like what I'm trying to do. Being in the convenience of home internet will keep you in your house much more than you would have been in the past. Like, before, you'd go to the store because you wanted whatever. You wanted a new movie, you wanted a game, you wanted music, whatever. You would go there, and it would get you out of the house, and it would be like an experience. And so I'm trying to bring that back for myself in a bigger way, by forcing basically myself to have to go out and get that type of stuff. But things are really nice, because even with Blu-rays, for example, like the movie thing, when I was purchasing all of my movies digitally, I couldn't share those movies with people, right? But now that I have Blu-ray, I have, like, if I have a coworker who likes movies, I can say, oh, hey, check out this movie, and like give them physically, like, here's the Blu-ray, you would like this movie, watch it when you get a chance, let me know. Or, you know, would you like to watch this and let me know what you think, you know? And hopefully eventually they return it, and then vice versa. Like, they might have something that you go, check this out. And that's, like, that's already happened for me, and which has been a wonderful experience, which is not available anymore with all this digital content. You can't do it with, digital games. Xbox, for example, their most recent large games, Alan Wake 2 and Hellblade 2, like, some big releases on Xbox, they are not available for physical release. I cannot play those games without the internet, period. So unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to play those games, you know. And if Xbox wants me to play them, they're gonna have to put them on a disc so I can go buy it. I just don't want to continue down this path of like digital everything. I think that there's a place for digital that makes sense, but there also is a place for physical media. Is a big part of this sort of conversation. I wish that more YouTubers would put their content on Blu-ray. I have seen some creators. There's a channel called, basically it's like the Angry Video Game Nerd. I don't know if he still does this, but he would put his like seasons of like his YouTube videos on Blu-ray, and you could buy them. He would take, there's something he would take with him to, like, if you ever went to like a video game conference. He would often be like a guest, and he would, you know, you could buy the stuff there, or you could buy it online. I desperately wish that more YouTubers would do that. So if you like happen to come across this and you're a YouTuber, think about saying like, okay, after a certain amount of time, let me put this content on Blu-ray and sell it. It's a nice thing to do, you know, and I don't know, hopefully you make money off of that as well. And because I feel like we need more of that, like, physical record of the content anyways. And if I could convince some of these YouTubers to do that, that would be amazing. I actually think this is I have way too many ideas, but this is one of my other, like, you know, my many business ideas, which would be basically taking content from YouTube and licensing it for release on Blu-ray. I think that would be, I think today still makes a ton of sense. People have a lot of Blu-ray players, you know, it's like people still have, these players to play the content and hope, you know, I don't know. It's certainly something I would buy. So, I'd like to see that, and it would give me the chance to buy it. The other thing I did was I actually subscribed to a service that sends you 10 Blu-rays every month. And they have a service also for video games as well. So basically, like, it's like you pay X dollars a month, and they literally just send you something in the mail once a month with 10 Blu-rays. They're sort of random. You pick the categories. So that's sort of my stopgap for, like, stuff that I wouldn't necessarily watch, which is kind of how I use YouTube, right? Which you come across things like you wouldn't normally see. And I'm, you know, I may subscribe to it for the video game side as well. But we'll see about that. I do wish that more companies would offer a subscription service for physical goods. And I think that there is some, and part of going through this process, I will learn about more that are available. So if you also know one of these companies that offers this type of service, and it's a good service, please let me know. You can listen to this podcast, most podcast services, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts. I do know that on Spotify in particular, that you can go in, there'll always be a question on each episode, something simple like, what did you think about this episode? If you're logged into Spotify, you can go find that. You can answer that question and give me suggestions about, like, what are some cool mail services, like services through the mail, subscription services or otherwise. What are some cool catalogs that I could subscribe to? What are other services that I could think about for this type of thing? And we'll also see, like, what's like, well, how am I going to view that comment? Well, this is a transitionary period, like I said. Once the home internet is off, I have a hotspot through my phone. I think it's like 10 gigabytes a month or something like that. So, and I still, I have this one computer left that has Wi-Fi capability, and that'll be my stopgap until I sell that computer off. So for a short time, I will have it. And then what could happen is if I'm able to go through this the whole way, is that I'll basically stack episodes. So I'll still continue to record things, but then I'll have to find a way to get them uploaded. So, which is my ideal working situation. Like, I would love to just record an entire season's worth of content in advance and then put it all up in, like, you know, a weekend or whatever. Basically, like, have short bursts of access to the internet throughout the year, you know, whether that's once a month or once a quarter, or even, like, if it's a once a year thing where you know, I engage with the internet, whatever content I've created offline, I can upload that to the internet, whether that's software that I've created, videos, or I'm literally also making music. So that's another thing that I did, was purchase some devices to make music with. These devices are called Dawless, DAWLESS. So Dawless means basically computer music that you can create without like software, like a DAW has to do with, I don't know what the exact term is, but it's basically the software that people use to make music with. I wanted basically to be able to make music without requiring a screen. So I bought some of those devices. I still have one, well, I still have two things to purchase. One is a keyboard, and there's another thing. But even with that, like, make music throughout the year and then just upload the best of at the end of the year kind of thing. I would like to do that. So I'm overall really excited about this. You see that I put thought into it. I'm thinking about what are the things I need, what are the things I'm going to miss. There are sacrifices with this, of course. Like, the internet is an incredible place with incredible information and up-to-date information on everything. And, you know, when a major event occurs, you can see it all from all angles and all this kind of stuff. So I'm going to miss out on some of that. Some of the entertainment I'm going to miss out sorely on. And we'll see how long I can keep this up. We'll see how it goes. But I'm very much interested in, like, what are some of these other resources? Like, I wish that there was, like, an ability to download YouTube videos. I say YouTube, but it's, like, it's not that YouTube is the thing I care about. It's the videos themselves. So I wish more creators would make their content available either for, like, a paid download or through, like, a Blu-ray service, something like that. I'll be really interested to explore, like, what's still available offline, what's available to purchase offline, making orders over the phone or by mail. Like, if you think about it, like, the original version of Windows, for example, the only way you could get that is if you mailed a check to, like, a P.O. box or whatever that they had, or whatever their mailing address was for Microsoft back then, like, and then they would mail it back to you. Same way with early software. You know, I want to move in this direction because it's I've been moving in this direction, but I want to do it even more because it's what's most sort of congruent for me. You know, the always online, welcome to the internet, Bo Burnham sort of, you know, everything and everything all of the time is just, it's like, even with email, I mean, that's the other thing, right? Email, if you listen to Cal Newport, for example, I mean, he talks about this quite a bit, where, like, yes, email was a really interesting technology, it's very useful in a lot of ways, but also there's, like, a lot of downsides to it. Email kind of sucks, and I think that I've been one of those people who's not been able to get to email zero, and I think it's sort of what I'm finally recognizing is, like, it's not my fault. Email's just bad, right? It's just, like, for me also, like, I'd rather talk on the phone than text. And there's a bit of, like, even socially, like, people are used to the texting and not so much the talking. So it's, like, you kind of have to, you know, push a little bit to just to push yourself to, like, make a phone call instead of doing a text, for example. But I think also, like, getting things in a mail feels a little bit more meaningful, special. Like, sending things to people in the mail feels more meaningful, special. I've always, like, wanted to buy a writing desk and really go all out on it. Like, having an old school, like, sort of slanted down writing desk where, you know, there's, like, an ink pen and even, like, a wax crest that I can use to close up my physical mail with. And I want to really declare this and move into this direction much more. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to use technology. I'm definitely continuing with software. Very interested in building things, you know, being a part of, like, new solutions to things. It's just, instead of what we did do is, like, really, like, move all the way into technology and figure out how far we can push the technology, I want to kind of go back and bring with us the things that we've forgotten and sort of bring more balance into the equation. So, and that requires me to build devices that are, you know, like, once I re-engage with the internet, it's going to be with devices, hopefully, that I can create that are built from the ground up to be distraction-free. That includes computer, phone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I want to be a part of that. And I'm excited to see how this journey goes and how long it lasts. Thanks.